Welcome back to the ICA podcast. I'm Steve Prines, and I'm the course author and instructor for our home inspection training program. I thought today we'd talk about what home inspectors actually do on a real inspection. That's a pretty common question we get. There are some misconceptions about what home inspection's all about, so I think it'd be worthwhile in today's podcast to go through the steps, talk about what home inspectors do and what they don't do, or what they may optionally do. Now, first of all, a home inspection is not a building code inspection per se. It is certainly a function and safety inspection, but it's not a building code inspection. Many times when a home inspector takes a call from a potential client, that's one of the first things the client will ask. I want to make sure the house is up to code. Are you going to check all that stuff? Well, the reason we don't specifically do building codes as home inspectors is because codes do vary from town to town and from county to county. In some areas, they simply go by state building code, but in many areas, especially more urbanized areas, you may have a town like Chicago, as an example, has probably a couple of hundred suburbs around it. Every suburb has their own building codes. Chicago has a completely separate building code, and of course, even towns that use building codes that you may have heard of, depending on your background, like the International Residential Code, well, these towns are all going in different editions of the IRC. Some are going by an edition that could be 10 years old. Some towns have adopted in a more recent code edition. So as a home inspector, we're not going to be able to take the time and go from house to house and town to town and try to learn what the codes are before you inspect that house. And the other reason that building codes aren't really relevant to home inspections is that, for the most part, home construction is grandfathered in. As an example, something was built in 1950, according to a 1950-era code, then unless major changes are made to the home, there's generally no requirement to bring that home up to current building code. So if you go in an old Victorian home, as an example, it may still have lead water piping. As a home inspector, you may want to report the fact that they have lead water piping as a safety consideration because of the danger to their personal health, but it's not necessarily a code issue because while lead piping would be against code by current code, it was not at the time. So you see the difference. We might report that lead water piping as a safety issue, but not as a code issue. That's the first big question we get. We are definitely not building code inspectors. Now, there are some times when, as a home inspector, you do want to report a code-related item, not because it's code, but because you don't want to have a situation where your client moves into the home and then perhaps they have to pull a building permit for some other work, and then a town's building inspector will come in and say, oh, you can't have this. This doesn't meet our code, even though the item wasn't particularly dangerous. There are times that you may sort of skirt the code issue as a home inspector, but what we typically do is instead of saying this item is against code, we might say that we noticed something that was not in conformance with current practice or not in conformance with local practice. And then you can tell your client on the side, well, this doesn't meet building codes. I don't do building codes, but here's the reason I'm telling you this. And give them an opportunity, if they choose to call that local town's building department and ask them whether that item is against code or not against code or how big of a deal it would be. Now, as a home inspector goes through the house, most inspectors use a certain order, and that's certainly what we teach in the ICA program. We teach an outside-in and top-down process, and then you should really repeat that for every home inspection that you do. And I think most home inspectors probably follow an order similar to what we teach. Specifically, we teach home inspectors to go around the exterior of the home, then do the roof, then do the garage, whether that's an attached or detached garage, and then go inside the home, starting at the highest level and working your way down. Typically, the highest level would be the attic. And now, whether or not you want to specifically look for the attic hatch and start there, or simply start the top floor and then do the attic hatch when you find it, that's fine too. You work your way down through the home, and if there's a basement or crawl space, most inspectors like to do that last. It's very important, especially if there's a dirt floor crawl space, to do that last after you've run a lot of water in the home because you're looking for leaks. So if you were to do the crawl space before you did the rest of the house, you might not see the dripping pipes that occur after you've run water or flushed toilets. And obviously you want to make sure you find that stuff for your client. During a home inspection, it's typically better to have your client with you if possible. That way, as you find defects, you can point them out to your client. You can have a discussion about them. Your client can ask some questions. And it's also great to have the client there because the client gets a chance to see what you do. They get a chance to see how hard you've worked for them. And in fact, later on, the fact that your client's been there during the whole inspection, that can certainly make things easier later on if for some reason your client thinks maybe you didn't find a defect. When the client is not there during the home inspection and they move into the home, they may or may not read the report carefully. Maybe you did find a defect, maybe you didn't, but I can tell you from experience that you get far more complaints from clients that were not at the home inspection than from clients that were at the home inspection. And not to say that you should get that many complaints to start with, but what I'm simply trying to point out is you will get a higher percentage of clients complaining when they weren't there and they really didn't see what you did. So you want the client there to walk through the home as you do the home inspection. You want them right there with you. You can point things out to them. And then at the end of the inspection, you get a chance to sort of wrap things up with the client, make sure all their questions have been answered. You can take an opportunity to go back and look at things one more time if that's what the client would like to do. And then you move on, and if you have another inspection scheduled for that day, you move on down the road for the next inspection, or you go back to your home or office and you get the report completed. For a home inspection, report delivery typically should be by no later than the following morning. If you're in a state that licenses home inspectors, the time for report delivery may be dictated by law. However, it would be very common under a state licensing scenario to give you 2 business days or 3 business days to get the report done. But even if you're allowed 2 business days, I firmly believe you should get that report done, hopefully today, and delivered by the next morning at the latest. The inspection isn't truly done until you've done the report, and your client's waiting for that. So there's no sense in making them wait an unreasonable amount of time. And in my opinion, waiting 2 days for the report is an unreasonable amount of time. And from your own viewpoint, why would you want to wait 2 days to do a home inspection report? Because all that's going to do is cause you to forget more about the details of the home, no matter how good your notes are. Many inspectors these days, with a state-of-the-art report format, are largely filling out the report as they do the inspection on a tablet or some other handheld device using state-of-the-art reporting software, which can be purchased from many sources. And of course, photos are included within those reports. You can buy a handwritten report format, but we don't recommend them. That really went out with the dinosaurs. It's not very competitive. I mean, if you go out and you want to market yourself to real estate agents or to whoever you want to market yourself to, having a handwritten report is truly yesterday's news, and no one's really going to be impressed by it. Now, as far as when you find a defect or a series of defects, most home inspectors do not estimate the cost of repairs, even if you have a strong knowledge base in that. As an example, let's say that you're a roofer and you're thinking about going into the home inspection business. So you would have a pretty good idea about how much roofs are going to cost, and you know what they charge per square and what different shingle styles may cost per bundle and so forth. And that's all well and good. But sticking with that same scenario, as a roofer, you would also know that the prices for doing a roof vary throughout the year. Roofers typically quote higher prices before the onset of winter, especially in northern climates, because so many people are trying to get their old crummy roof replaced before winter starts. You know, the other thing that can happen, as you would know if you're a roofer, sometimes you're slower, you price jobs a little bit cheaper. Sometimes you're overwhelmed with work. Well, obviously, it's human nature that your prices get a little bit higher. So you can see where I'm going with this. It's probably not a good idea to give your client any type of a cost estimate for repairs. It's really best to simply refer them to the proper tradesperson. And again, sticking with this roofing scenario, if you're a roofer, no matter how much you know about a roof, on a home inspection report, you would simply recommend further evaluation by a qualified roofing contractor. and then leave it up to your client to bring out the contractor or contractors of their choice and have them provide cost estimates for repairs. That's really the way the home inspection standards of practice, which are provided by the three major home inspection associations, that's really what those standards of practice are set up to do, to simply have the home inspector refer the defects that they find to the appropriate tradesperson and let those tradespeople come in and tell your client how much these repairs are going to cost or how long these repairs may take and so forth. So we typically don't estimate costs. Now, having said that, there are some home inspectors that do include cost estimates in their reports. If you want to, you can. I would certainly be careful with it. You don't want to get yourself into trouble. Now, in that same school of thought, we probably do not want to recommend specific tradespeople for repairs. So when you find a defective furnace in your report, you would say that you recommend further evaluation by a qualified heating contractor. That's probably all that you should say. You should not tell the client on the side, hey, you know, my friend Harry, he's a great heating contractor. You really ought to bring him in here. That's pretty much a conflict of interest, and you could get yourself into trouble doing that. If for no other reason than if Harry doesn't do a good job, you're not going to look very good. Or in fact, if Harry actually does a good job, but your client simply doesn't think they did a good job, or your client thinks they overpaid Harry because they didn't get any other price estimates. If your client really presses you for referrals for contractors, or if you feel that you might want to provide that as a service, it's always best to refer at least three different tradespeople for any given area. So if you did find a defective furnace and you reported it as such and you said recommend further evaluation by qualified heating contractor, if you decided to go the next step and help the client by finding a contractor, it's usually best to provide at least three names of heating contractors that you know to be reputable. And the other thing is, if you really offhand don't know of someone that's reputable, if you'd simply be looking them up yourself on the internet or even in a phone book, if you remember those, they, I think, still do publish phone books. But in any case, if you don't specifically know of a contractor, then there's no reason to just grab a name off the internet and give it to your client, because that's something they could do themselves. I would only refer people that I know personally to be very good contractors. And again, I would refer no less than three or even four or five or however many you have. That way you're leaving it up to your client to decide who they want to get. And again, if they think that particular contractor is overcharging them or didn't do a good job, they can't hold that against you quite as much, because you gave them several names and they picked the one that they felt most comfortable with. Well, that about covers today's topics. If you have a question or topic that you would like to have us include in a future podcast, just send it to podcast@icaschool.com. That's podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, at icaschool.com. Thanks for listening to the ICA Podcast.